It's the Trump Report, your weekly roundup of all the political news and current events. Yes, we really do have the best covfefe in one place. The Trump Report starts now!
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin!
You know, that's really the problem with doing a weekly show is I think it was actually late Tuesday night that we were all subjected to covfefe out there, and we've had to sit on it for a whole week. Everybody's done all the jokes and everything, but no, I wouldn't be stopped.
Now we get to do a summary of the summary.
Well, exactly, and I'm just saying that we talk about how great it is when stuff happens Tuesday afternoon or even Monday night. When something great happens on Tuesday, we really miss out. Welcome to the Trump Report. I'm Christian Blatt at Christian DMZ. Joined as always by Chelsea Galicia at Chelsea Galicia.
Hi.
And Scott, what happened? You look a little different for those watching on YouTube. It's our old pal Drexel Hurd at Drexel Hurd.
Hello.
Thank you for running from Las Vegas to the studio where you both, I assume, just finished Political Culture on BHL. And then they're in here with us. God only knows what show you're doing after this because...
Sleep. That's exactly what I'm doing.
We get to watch him sleep.
Just my eyes.
We'll do an after show where we talk about Drexel's dreams.
I could do an after show on sleep.
I bet. And not getting enough of it or just how
it's
well rested you
feel? It's a high priority for me.
That's what I dream about. I don't have time to sleep. I just dream about being able to sleep. And by the way, at Trump Report ABTV, that's how you can find us. And yes, you did hear Rage Against the Machine testify. We will talk about.
I just saw George Bush pop up in that video.
Yeah, that's how old the video was, and that's what I was saying to Steve, our engineer in the booth, before we started. That video, the Rage Against the Machine video, is from 1999, and in it, you go, "Wow, W looked so young," and Al Gore was so thin. So it's very, very strange. You can tell that was from a long time ago.
That's funny.
Anyway, so that was...
99. I think I was like a sophomore in high school.
Oh, that sounds great. That must have been fun to be a sophomore in high school back then. Right. I was in the workforce.
I hadn't even started high school yet.
No. Yeah. So there you go. Oldest. Anyway, the testify that we're talking about, the testimony. There's going to be two Senate Intelligence Committee hearings this week, tomorrow, which means we have to wait a week to talk about it, and then Thursday's the big one. But let's start off talking a little bit about tomorrow, 10 a.m. Eastern, which means 7 our time, which means...
If you value sleep,
you're not going to be up to hear Rod Rosenstein and others talk about at this National Security Agency hearing. And then Thursday... 10 a.m. Eastern as well. Same Trump time, same Trump channel. It's the main event. Senate Intelligence Committee Chairman Richard Burr and Ranking Member Mark Warner, Democrat, they're trying to be, hey, this is a bipartisan hearing. And it's nice when people try and play pretend and things like that.
Why pretend?
Well, just because I don't trust anybody anymore. I mean, Mark Warner, I think, is like, oh, yeah, I'm really focused on this. I don't know enough about Richard Burr, but I loved him on Perry Mason.
Let me tell you, full disclosure, I think we've talked about this before back in my non-Democrat days. I actually...
Which is, what, about 1999?
Which was 2004 when Richard Burr got elected. I was at his rally. I was at a Burr rally.
Oh,
yeah. I did not know that.
A friend of mine sent me. I had just joined College Republicans at the time because I was a freshman in college, and Richard Burr was running for election. George Bush was obviously running for re-election. So there was a whole barbecue for Richard Burr in North Carolina at the time, and I went to this little barbecue.
Was it like a big turnout?
I met him.
Oh.
Yeah, it was a huge turnout. You know who else was there? Strom Thurmond.
Ooh,
wow.
A blast from the past.
I did.
A sighting of Strom Thurmond in the 21st century. Not a lot of people can say that
yeah.
happened to them.
I'm pretty sure he's the only black person there. and made it out alive.
And by the way, if Strom Thurmond had known you were going to be there, he probably
wouldn't
have shown up. But anyway, so your thoughts back then, at least, on Richard Burr. Do you feel like he's a guy who is doing the right thing? And he's like, no, I really want this. We want to get to the bottom of it. Is he just going to sort of be a Reince Priebus puppet?
I don't think that Richard Burr, based on what I've seen, obviously there are policies that he believes in that we just don't agree with. But I think from a practice, I think that he's one of those people that is like, well, if it falls in my lap, I'm just going to have to deal with it as it falls in my lap. But I'm not going to stand in its way. Like, he's not going to, he's not doing a Jason Chaffetz or a Jason Chaffetz, I'm sorry, or a, who else? Or, a, I don't know, even Lindsey. I think Richard Burr reminds me a little bit of Lindsey Graham.
Okay.
Like, yes, I'm on the president's side because I don't want the Republican Party to crumble. But at the same time, if Trump goes down, it might not be a bad thing for the rest of us. So I just think he's just going to ride that line.
I think that makes sense. And then obviously burying the lead, that hearing is the James Comey testimony. And Chelsea, what do you think we're going to hear? What do you hope we hear?
I think we're going to hear confirmation of some of the things that we have heard. Like, I think he will be asked, did Trump ask you for loyalty? And he might say yes, or if Trump used a different word, like, can I count on you to be there for me, if that's...
Right. If he had said, are you my guy? Well, then it's like, well, what exactly does that mean?
But,
are you hitting on me?
But he will either testify to whatever was in the memo that he wrote himself, or he'll turn the memo over itself.
I'm surprised he hasn't done that already. And that the memos haven't been leaked yet.
Well, I think it's going to have a better effect this way. But where I think people will be disappointed is most people, I think, are saying or thinking that James Comey is going to be used to prove obstruction of justice.
Right.
And obstruction of justice, the hardest part about it to prove is the intent, the mindset of the perpetrator, in this case, Trump.
So accidentally obstructing justice is not as serious of an offense.
It's actually not an offense.
Wow.
And that's actually probably Trump's biggest defense, is that he didn't know that firing somebody was obstructing justice.
Isn't it going to be easy to prove that he doesn't know what he's doing? I mean, is that going to be sort of an easy thing to do?
Kind of, because he doesn't really know what he's doing. I mean, that's how he may get away with it, really, which is why I know people are excited about this idea of bringing him down with this obstruction of justice thing, but I don't think it's going to happen. So what I think people are going to want Comey to answer are questions like, was Trump trying to do this? Was he thinking this? Or they may not come out and use the words, was Trump thinking? Because obviously,
seriously,
no one can know what somebody right. is thinking, so you'd have to decline to answer that question. But they're going to try and get at answers that are going to help prove Trump's mindset. And Comey's probably not going to go there. And Comey's probably also not going to go there and like how he felt. So questions might be like, did you feel pressured? Did you feel that you needed to do this? Did you, feeling-based questions he's probably not going to answer. So I think there will be a couple of probably three or like yes answers that confirm, you know, Trump asked for loyalty, Trump said drop the investigation, and that's it. But we're not going to get anything more.
And just a couple things. R. Scott Brown, thank you for reminding me of Devin Nunes, because I was like, what is that? I could see his face. I just could not remember his name.
I'm sorry that you could see his face.
I was like, who is this?
By the way, we've established that Scott Brown is not Massachusetts Senator Scott Brown.
But it would be cool if it was, but it's even cooler that R. Scott Brown is in the chat room right now.
Yeah,
exactly. But I also, to go back to what your first thing about Trump being able to kind of get away with it because he's not as
like he didn't know that he was obstructing justice, because to obstruct justice, you have to know that the actions that you're taking are to impede an investigation.
And General McMaster alluded to that in his testimony, which was people might not know what they're getting themselves into, and by the time they're in it, they're already deep in it, and they've already crossed that line of obstructing justice or committing treason or anything. Like, they just don't know. Like, and that came up with Jared Kushner. He probably hadn't. I would assume he's smart enough to know this, but like, some people just generals. I mean, but I just mean like, you know, tactically, like, how can I get around? Like, I'm sure he's tried to figure out tactically how to get around it. But if you don't, to your point, if you don't know, then yeah, it's easy to be like, I just didn't know. But then at what point do we go, well, then you're unfit?
Well, there's no law, apparently, to be unfair. I mean, there is the amendment where if enough of the cabinet members think that the president is unfit, that they can... I should look up which amendment that is.
Right. I know that there 25. Is an amendment to that.
Isn't that the maybe, one where they have to
maybe
sign?
Maybe our Scott Brown or someone else in the chat can tell us. But, yeah, and I think that... I wouldn't look to this cabinet for the kind of salvation
Although,
that you're hoping for.
Because of the problems that he's having with, like, Rex Tillerson and he are not seeing really eye to eye.
Yeah.
He and Jeff Sessions are not.
Which we will talk about.
Buddy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Jeff Sessions is probably not, if he were on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, he would not want to be his phone a friend.
Right.
But what, oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, we talked about on Political Culture about, just about an hour ago, about. If Jeff Sessions resigned, Trump would have nobody, because Jeff Sessions is his line of defense right now. Not even any of these people, not even Mueller, Rosenstein. Like, these people are not line of defenses for him. But from a Muslim ban standpoint, from all of these like Department of Justice things, the buck stops with Jeff Sessions, and he's his protector. But what Chelsea was saying earlier about the the loyalty conversation, I think there was an intelligence official that came out today that said that Trump asked him to intervene in stopping James Comey, he was asking James Comey or to stop James Comey or somehow impede the investigation and to get him to do that. Get an intelligence official to do that. So
right.
Which we're going to see more of that leaking. If you're not going to leak classified information like the person from The Intercept, like Reality Winner,
which we will also talk about, yes.
Then at least leak conversations.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that, whatever there is that maybe doesn't get discussed in these hearings during the testimony, if there is anything else to know, somebody will, of course, leak it somewhere. But I agree with Chelsea in that I think that people will hear some interesting things. It'll definitely confirm some assumptions. But if anybody thinks that there is a gun, much less a smoking one, that like this is what we need. People have Thursday circled as the day where really we can start drawing up, papers for impeachment. I think they're going to be more than a little disappointed.
I mean, they're going to be disappointed, just like
25th
Trump.
Amendment.
25th Amendment. That's what I was saying. President. Yeah, yes. And R. Scott Brown, who's at it as well. But I think that Trump anti-Trumpers will be just as disappointed in James Comey's testimony as anti-Hillary people were when James Comey.
Because it's not going to vindicate their guy.
Right.
It's not going to be like, see, nobody's really going to be happy with it. I would think Democrats would be a little happier. But I think that, it's not like this is going to be the exoneration.
Right.
But we'll see. And then we'll be able to talk about it next week. On Tuesday, well, it'll be so many days before we get to talk about it. But
get to talk about everybody else talking about it.
Yeah,
well, this is where you come for the summary of the summaries.
Well, right. And Trump will have had quite a few days to tweet about whatever was said there. So at least we can do a Twitter recap. And we do need to start doing a segment, Drexel. I don't know if you know, but our friend Scott Moore, he pretty much every day gets up and gets into Twitter arguments with Mitch McConnell and I believe also Donald Trump now.
Interesting.
It was just Mitch McConnell. And I've said that we're going to have to start like presenting some of those selections at the end of
Twitter
each episode.
Segment.
Yeah, just like, who's Scott tweeting at now? And he's at SMan80 for anybody that wants to get a head start and read those. See, look at that. He's not even here and I promote his social media. Well, anyway, we talked about Jeff Sessions. And I guess the way to look at it, the way I summarize it, is that he does not seem to be the belle of the ball as he was before, according to the New York Times. President Trump is reportedly soured on Jeff Sessions, and he blames him for much of the early woes of the White House because he couldn't possibly blame himself. But he's especially concerned over the way that this Justice Department, which, just for everybody to know, headed by Jeff Sessions, the way that it's handled the executive orders that have been intended to curb immigration and travel from several Muslim-majority countries, a.k.a. the Muslim ban. So the way that that's gone is apparently Jeff Sessions' fault. And I'm not saying that Jeff Sessions has helped it along, but I don't think that anybody in that job would have really been able to get those executive orders passed.
My understanding is that he was upset that Jeff Sessions decided to drop the first travel ban and do a second one that was politically correct.
Yes.
And weaker. But didn't Trump decide to pull it down and sign a new one? Was that
Look,
Jeff
he signs
Sessions'
a lot of things.
Signature on it?
So what that doesn't what make, if it was, by
that
the way?
That doesn't make a lot of sense. So I would like to blame Jeff Sessions for a lot of things, but that can't be one of them because that's just not reasonable. Then the other thing that I heard Trump was upset about was that Sessions had recused himself from anything related to Russia. And there was, I mean, he had no choice. I mean, it shows me that he has a bit of a conscience more than Trump, because the only right thing to do would have been to resign or at the very least recuse. He opted to recuse. And Trump apparently is livid about that. I mean, I guess he probably feels defenseless, and that's why he's so angry, because nobody in the Justice Department would go out on the limb for him the way that Jeff Sessions would, but Jeff Sessions can't do a dang thing.
Which I also think there's a couple things on that, at least in my opinion, is Jeff Sessions has relationships with a lot of senators who on some level respect him, and I think that he wants to keep that respect level. On the other side, that's the same story that the New York Times put out was similar to the story that Donald Trump was upset or soured by General McMaster. And then so if you were looking at a pattern of Donald Trump, a story goes out that Donald Trump is upset with somebody. We all know that Maggie Haberman, that the direct line to any source that Maggie Haberman puts out is Donald Trump. Like, he's the source. So if that is the story and she wrote that story, then yeah. That came from Donald Trump. He is absolutely pissed at Jeff Sessions. He wants it out in the news.
And he wants Jeff Sessions to know. And he wants Jeff Sessions to find out that way.
Yeah. So then so that story comes out about General McMaster. The next 2 days, I don't know, within the next week, General McMaster is out on the White House lawn giving a press conference about something. And then defending everything. Like, I've never seen the NSA director as much as I have in these past few weeks, as I had since General McMaster, the story came out that Donald Trump was not happy with General McMaster. So it might, I would not be surprised if we don't see Jeff Sessions in the next couple of weeks coming out and the Justice Department going full steam on a few things. As we saw on Friday, Justice Department is already asked the Supreme Court to look into the Muslim ban. So, like, there might be a couple of steps that Jeff Sessions is like, okay, well, maybe I should get back in his good graces. I don't know. And so I think that's going to be the pattern. Donald Trump puts out a story about a cabinet official. That cabinet official trots himself back out, gets back in Trump's good graces, and we're all good. And then it's going to be a pattern of an abusing pattern for these cabinet officials. And eventually they're either going to resign or they're going to do something so outrageous that they're going to just have to step, you know, that they're going to have to let go.
And you heard it here first, gang. Jeff Sessions is going to come out. I hope he's happy with it. Anyway, one of the things that Trump has been talking about his travel ban for is in relations to the London terror attack on Saturday. And this sort of came up conversationally earlier in this week with someone I know. And they're like, you mean Manchester? I'm like, oh, no, there was one in London. And somebody pointed out on Twitter, and I always try to give credit, but I don't remember who it was, is that attack happened before they had time to have the tribute concert that they put together to the Manchester attack. So that's how quickly we're getting these kind of attacks now. You know, you can't even properly honor the previous one beforehand. And I think that that's been very well covered, that particular attack. And in a moment, we'll talk about President Trump's response. The thing that and we've talked about this before when some of these have happened, either on this show and or on Trump versus Hillary, it all kind of runs together. And basically, it's the same show, except Stephen Helmkamp was on one of them, but not the other one. But I'm sure he's having a lot of fun. He seems to be traveling the world, so good for him. Yeah, it's just somebody who wanted Trump to be president. He sure has spent a lot of time out of the country. It's a joke, just in case he's watching, which I doubt he is. But anyway, so the thing when you hear the reporting of these terrible attacks in London, there's often this thing where everyone's hesitant to call something terrorism right away, and I'm not quite sure who you're worried about upsetting. Terrorists who you accidentally gave credit to, or you know, somebody who's not a terrorist calling them.
I think it alarms people.
Yes.
It scares the public more when you use the word terrorism.
But if you feel pretty confident that that's what it is, and if that's what the indications are, I don't know what you get from sitting on it.
But I also think there's two things, because, again, we talked about this briefly in political culture, which is if we say the word terrorism just as Americans, Americans automatically think Muslims. Like, that's their go-to, at least under this administration, that is their go-to thought. And I think that Barack Obama was very careful about how the Obama administration is very careful about how they said it. Other world leaders are very careful about making statements using the word terrorism and figuring out who it is first. But we also have a problem in – arguing about Hillary Clinton in the chat room, but there's also another side to that, because here in America we don't define things like Oklahoma City and unless any domestic terrorism situation by a white male Christian in America is not defined as terrorism, and so we have got to figure out how, if we're going to use terrorism for one group, then we're going to use terrorism. We're going to use terrorism for all the groups,
right? Which is certainly where I come down on. It's like, yeah, it's a terrorist. I mean, an act of terrorism does not imply, you know, that's a separate issue of, you know, radical Islamic terrorism. You know, but just saying terrorism. Me,
when I first heard like the London story, like hitting pedestrians. Do you remember? I don't know how long ago it was. Feels like decades ago, where an old man plowed into a bunch of people at the Santa Monica farmers market.
Which, my understanding is that was not an act of terrorism. That was an old guy who probably should not have been driving.
Right. And I remember him saying, people should have gotten out of my way.
I mean,
that's just crazy old people.
So, yeah.
So, like, when you have a situation of people who get mowed down, you may not immediately know if we have, like, a deranged old man who's just
sad. Right. And look, there are a lot of reasons why people get stabbed.
I mean, people jump
Orlando
out of a
this
van.
Week, we had a workplace shooting. So, you know, that is not a terrorist act the way that we tend to think of them, because that wasn't motivated by anything other than, you know, somebody being a disgruntled employee, which, you know, it's a fine line. But I felt like we were pretty confident that these were actual terrorist acts. And not that I'm siding with President Trump on this, but that was the point he was trying to make, which is, well, first of all, he took information and synthesized it incorrectly.
But did you see the AP's response to that?
I did not.
The AP put out a statement that said any information from the president, I'm just paraphrasing, sure. I don't know, so I'm sure somebody will correct me, but it said any information from Donald Trump is not reliable. Any information about Donald Trump about world events is not reliable. We won't publish X, Y, and Z. It was like something about that happened in real time. And the AP came out and was like, we cannot publish what the president is saying because
we have higher
standards. We've got, you know, and yeah, the AP
we
is
have
just
higher standards.
But the AP
Twitter,
is a wire service. But I mean, if you look at NBC, CBS, Fox News, all those guys, obviously their journalistic, I mean, standards are lower than the AP because they're not a wire service like AP and Reuters, but you would think that other news organizations would want to start vetting some of the stuff coming out of this White
Well,
House.
I think by putting up the actual tweet with his picture next to it where it says at real Donald Trump should let you know that you might be in the fake news zone, but I think a lot of people don't necessarily take it that way. And back to the point I was trying to make, which is that he got upset that London's mayor was telling people, he was trying to tell people not to panic. And on the one hand, you know, that might be a time to not necessarily panic. Definitely don't just relax, which I don't think is which actually I know is not what he said. You know, the idea of, you know, you don't want people running through the streets, which is the point you made about not saying that it's terrorism. So somewhere in there is a fine line. And President Trump definitely came down way on the wrong side of the line. But somebody somewhere saying, like, you know, maybe be a little panicked. Don't freak out, but be alert. Be very concerned.
Vigilant.
You know, I mean, people made fun of the color-coded alert system we had, probably because people didn't understand it. But something like that, it's like, well, we've now been elevated, and now we're yellow or orange. I don't know which one was worse.
But if you – so in the case of New York City, the whole See Something, Say Something initiative that came out of Homeland Security that was, I believe, started by Janet Napolitano when she was Homeland Security Secretary, just that whole See Something, Say Something phrase, that keeps you on your toes. Because you see it everywhere in New York subways. If you see something, say something. I mean, that's pretty scary. But it's not like scary in like a threatening way. It's like, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that goes on. If you see something, if you see a bag, if you see a crazy person, like, you know, I saw this lady coming from Las Vegas and she didn't look like she could make it. Like she was drunk, obviously, but like,
sure.
You know, I'm seeing something. I probably should be like, she's not gonna make it on this plane. Yeah. You know, and so like, but that's done in a way to alert people. But it's not done in a way to scare people. And in my opinion, Republicans do a very good job of using scare tactics when it comes to national security issues. Now, somebody might argue that Democrats use scare tactics when it comes to social issues, like, LGBT rights, on pro-choice rights. Like, but at the same time, it's not helping. The way that the Republicans do it is not helping people. The way the Democrats do it is helping a marginalized group. And I think that, you know, Republicans just, they don't get that terror. They don't get the definition of terrorism, at least in my opinion. They don't get that terrorism, by definition, is to cause panic.
Yeah, no, I think I definitely agree with that assumption that that's the definition of terrorism. And I think that's why you hear so many people on the right for so long beating the drum of the idea that it is radical Islamic terrorism, because that's kind of all they're talking about. They're a lot less worried about Timothy McVeigh and, you know, the Unabomber, you know, very white guys, by the way. You know, these are not the kind of people that they're as concerned with. And that's where President Trump feels like the travel ban is actually something that's going to help us. He seems to be in an ever increasing minority on that, though, you know, and
on the travel ban.
On the travel ban, yeah.
I think people maybe are less excited about talking about it, but I think that there are some people who still really support it.
Absolutely.
Even looking at the chat going on, nobody's exactly spoken on the travel ban, but I get the feeling that some of those people, and they can tell me if I'm correct, are people who staunchly support travel ban.
And I'll just point out somebody's Jared in the chat room says, just talking about importing more foreigners in terms of receiving refugees, and they don't bother to work on assimilationist policies. America doesn't run on assimilationist policies because that's not what we do here. You know, we are a melting pot of different people, so we should not be asking foreigners to come to the United States, because there's nothing to like assimilate into.
Well, language, perhaps.
Language, yeah, but. But even still,
do have them know a bit of our history.
But even still, if you go across,
but only if they want to become citizens.
But if you go to other countries, I bet you, American. Obviously, we know this. American goes to another country, an American does not know another language. But if a foreigner comes here, chances, I would say, maybe 6 out of 10 people who come to the United States, if they're coming from a foreign country, knows their first language, and then they know English as well. So the other 4 people are going to have to, you know, eventually learn how to do that. But Americans just are not taught in American schools. Yeah, we can go through 3 years of, you know, foreign language class or whatever, but we're not retaining that, and it's not helping us because we're also not traveling as much as other countries do. We don't have as much time off in terms of work as other countries do. We don't have the money to travel because we're too busy worried about healthcare bills and stuff like that. So yeah, we're not utilizing the tools that we would have learned in school, so we cannot assimilate when we go overseas. If that's the argument, do Americans, you know, and that's the same question that I would ask people: should Americans assimilate if you move to another country?
I think it would depend on what the expectations are of that country.
But to some extent, you should. But I bet you that argument, if you made that argument to some Trump supporter or Republican or conservative, whatever, who makes the argument that people should come over here to assimilate, could not wrap their head around an American citizen going across the world and assimilating to that country's language, norms, and, yeah, and
in
practices.
Fact, isn't that that's probably why so many countries complain about American tourists that we're just kind of loud and obnoxious and basically don't try and adopt any of their
right,
norms.
And they make it easy for us because they all know English already, so that makes it a lot easier. And by the way, to Drexel's point about 6 out of 10 people coming from another country already knowing English when they come here, I'll let everybody in the audience just guess where President Trump thinks that the other 4 come from and the wall that will prevent them from actually coming here.
You know what I saw today? English. An article that, like, a while ago I saw something similar vein. I can't believe he kind of picked it up. But a wall that had solar panels to help pay for it.
Well, see, that's what President Trump should have done, because then you're making the left, you know, come out against solar panels, which, you know, is just... you know, where's somebody? I don't know. I would have thought Steve Bannon was at least had that
would
level.
That would require Donald Trump, after pulling out of the Paris Climate Agreement, to use solar panels to be invested in solar panels, which
right.
this administration
but he's invested
is not going to do
just for political purposes, right. not because he actually thinks they're important.
Right.
Just to sort of tie up on the travel ban, I was reading something interesting, and maybe our recovering attorney Chelsea could shed a little light on this. There was this idea that President Trump could very well have hurt his case with the Supreme Court for having – he had a series of course, early morning tweets, and he referred to the latest version of his temporary travel ban as, quote-unquote, politically correct and calling for, quote-unquote, a much tougher version. So it sort of makes it seem like even he doesn't support what's going to get in front of the Supreme Court. I mean, do they consider things like that? As a future Supreme Court justice, what do you think?
Right. A Trump appointee?
President Hurd would appoint you.
I would. I would.
Vice President Moore.
Yeah, I like the sound of that.
I want to be communications director.
Well, you already got that, Toby Ziegler.
Sorry, Chelsea.
I don't think that these comments will go into the Supreme Court's analysis. Because the reason that they used his sort of outside words meaning not words that were found exclusively in the executive order, but like what he said in the media and his tweets, was to try and discern the intent. Was there a discriminatory intent? Was this a discrimination against a certain religion, which you cannot discriminate against, right? So these phrases might personally annoy the justices, like... If he says something insulting to them, or, you know, but saying that the executive order is weak or that it's politically correct will not, I don't think, show up in the analysis.
I don't think it's going to bother Clarence Thomas for sure.
Although he might surprise us.
That's true.
You don't know. That one turn last a couple of weeks ago might just set his whole...
But that one was on a... why can't I even think of the term? Affirmative action.
Right. Which is something that Clarence Thomas has always been very consistent on.
Right. So he didn't change.
Right.
The times changed.
I will say that in terms
Drexel
of...
Drexel should replace spicy. That is the best
You know, I thought if it would be in Trump's best interest to hire liberals to run his comms team.
That's true. I mean... If he wants information to get out there, then, you know, people that aren't going to put any spin on anything,
right,
you know?
Right.
That's like Spicer's problem. He's too polished.
And that's funny. I like Drexel replacing Spicy more than I like Chelsea 2020. and thank you for being concerned about having me age rapidly.
But if you saw Donald Trump tweets about the travel ban, and shortly after all, you saw a whole bunch of people coming out and being like, this is not going to help him out. But the one surprise person that came out on Twitter was Kellyanne Conway's husband.
I saw this.
He tweeted something about, like, you know, I don't know why he would make these statements. This is obviously not going to help
it's pretty much exactly
right.
what he said.
And and he was up for what, like, Solicitor General?
Yeah.
And he had just dropped out, like, maybe a few days before. So, and then Kellyanne Conway, as he's tweeting that, is on TV giving an interview on MSNBC. So I don't think she saw the tweet, but...
I cannot imagine being married to Kellyanne Conway. That would... Could you...
I feel like she's a different person at home.
Yeah, haven't you all seen her stand-up comedy routine from the 90s?
She's the best.
So she's fantastic. Wow. Look, I mean...
I do like another comment, or there was a question. The moment he referenced religion in the first executive order, wasn't it by default a religious document? So that is the reason,
that
probably,
it was taken
why
out.
That the first one was pulled, although Trump now blames Sessions for pulling it. But that's
sort of the final sort of button on this is the fact that President Trump has acknowledged that the U.S. is already engaged in extreme vetting. So that says to the Supreme Court, well, then why do you need this? Mm-hmm. This is what you want, is extreme. If your vetting is so extreme, mm-hmm. clearly it's going to be very efficient and you're going to keep out all the bad people anyway, all the bad hombres.
But again, it's less about the principle. Like we talked about this. We talked about the Paris the U.S. pulling out of the Paris Climate Agreement last week. It's less about the principle of this, of the document or whatever's behind it, and more about the when, or more about sticking it to somebody else. In terms of Paris Climate Agreement, it was less about the United States' interests and more about sticking it to Barack Obama. But because you can see that in the statement on the Muslim ban, it's more about, I said this, I was going to do this in the campaign, and now I need to figure out ways to do it, whether or not it's legal or not. I'm going to find that. It's more about the win than it is about the American people, because Trump only wants to win, which is all he talked about during the campaign, which is about winning. And it's not about making smart policy.
Right. We only have a few minutes left, and I do want to get to reality winner. But since the pulling out of the Paris Climate Accord came up, I just want to spend literally like 2 minutes on it. Personally, I'm not surprised that happened. I think all the indications were that President Trump is not going to be a big believer in that. And well, let me just finish. My thought is very short. And then when we do have a Democratic president again, it'll come back around. It's sort of like there's a lot of, you know, access to abortion laws that change very quickly when you have a Republican president and they get changed back. So I think that there's repercussions, but I do think this is the sort of thing where let's see how much damage can happen in... Some would say 4 years, some would say eight, but until it changes. But what were you going to say?
I was going to ask you if you remember what I said last week when we talked about what we think he was going to say. I remember saying that he's going to want to negotiate it, but I think I said he's not going to pull out. He's just going to want to renegotiate it.
Right.
So I think I got like a...
You get partial credit there.
Yeah.
It's an incomplete.
And another argument that we brought up just real quick on the Paris Climate Agreement was that... We saw, and this goes back to the argument of somebody in the communications department really should be spinning this in a way that benefits the president. We saw 200 cities across the country and with like a dozen states sign on to the Paris Climate Agreement. And in my head, if I was comms team or comms team for somebody who did not believe in the role of the federal government as it is, a libertarian, whatever, I would say this is exactly what we wanted. We wanted the states to make the decision on what worked for them. And this is what happened. The domino effect is New York's doing it. This is doing it. These cities are California's doing it, and they're making their own decisions to do that. If Trump had come out there in the Rose Garden and said that, other than I was elected by the people of Pittsburgh and not Paris,
yeah.
If he would have made that argument to Republicans, people would have understood that. Republicans would have understood that. Rand Paul would have been like, absolutely. Paul Ryan, absolutely. Mitch McConnell, absolutely. This is exactly what the Republican line should be. But this communications team does not understand how to spin it like that.
Well, they don't think they need to.
Well, they should.
That's a bigger problem.
Here is one important thing that I'm going to suggest. I know that this is last week's news, but I'm going to suggest something totally and completely radical. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
That's not surprising.
Read the dang thing.
Okay, that's the craziest thing you've ever now. Stop. Listen, no one reads anything.
It's 25 pages long, but it's like you can blow it up to big font. The language is pretty easy. I think you'd probably need a sixth grade education to read the dang thing.
Yeah, it's not that long.
And you will see that many of the reasons that it was so bad and terrible and I see poorly structured and expensive and all that kind of stuff is just utter nonsense.
It's
confifi.
It is confifi. Well, we need to talk about a very important 25-year-old federal contractor. Her name? Reality Winner. She was charged with leaking information regarding a 2016 Russian military intelligence cyber attack, and that was given to The Intercept, an online news outlet, friends with Edward Snowden. She's a whistleblower, and she believes she's doing the right thing, preserving democracy, and she's shining a light on information the government doesn't want you to know. And yet, what most Americans aspire to live up to is not those actions, but her name. They would all love to be a reality winner. Could not believe that that was her name. Done. Thank you. I know, I tripped over my own cleverness. Yeah, and it's, you know, look, there's details there of a Russian cyber attack on a U.S. voting software supplier. No evidence hacking votes, but information that is, you know, helpful to have out there. But I can see also that it's like people are going to draw a conclusion from that. And here's the thing, you know, you can feel however you want about Reality Winner and her ridiculous name. You can feel however you want about Edward Snowden. These are people who break the law, and Edward Snowden was able to, you know, get away. Country,
right.
But Reality Winner, I guess, was only one of six people who ever printed the document, so it became very easy to figure out who had leaked it. And to her credit, she did own up to it. You know, I personally would have lawyered up, but you know, I think that you know, she's gonna have to. I mean, she's already. I don't know exactly what's going to happen to her, but she had to know that this was likely to happen.
I think that she might have thought that Democrats would corral around her, and obviously this happened yesterday, so she might just. I mean, we'll see the statements of Democrats.
A girl
over
named
the
tyranny. Oh my!
But it's like it's like tryanny, T-R-Y-A-N-N-Y.
But yeah, it's probably tyranny. If tyranny wants tyranny, to Skype in, right. Tyranny can be a guest here. Anyway, your thought, Jackson.
But I think that when it comes to whistleblower laws, obviously this is Donald Trump directing the FBI to go after whistleblowers as much as they could. Because I don't think the Obama administration would have acted like Edward Snowden was an exception. And obviously the president did not go after Edward Snowden as hard as he could have.
Edward Snowden, that information was, I think, something that probably
the public should have known. Yes, yeah. Obviously.
People were upset about, but also he... You know, what I think about what we know from that specific leak, I guess is the best way to put it.
But
you know,
the
idea of just how watched pervasive. We are. Yeah.
But this was also something that I think that obviously the public should watch because in the past few sessions in front of the Senate Intelligence Committee, people have come out. James Comey's come out. General McMaster, a couple other people have come out and said, I don't believe that voting machines were. Had an attempt. We have not seen information that voting machines have been tampered with. Now, on one side, that could be not to, if they would have come out and said that, then people would have questioned not only the election, but just the process of American voting in general. On the other side, it's exposing the fact that these intelligence agencies did have this information that Russia was attempting to do something to voting machines days before the election. So, it's like, what would you rather hear?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. And I think that we haven't heard the last of Reality Winner, mostly because of the amazing name. We really only have about 1 minute, but because we have Drexel here on the panel, I wanted to dive in on a topic of Bill Maher, who usually is lauded and applauded for things he says. He is a comedian who probably is very used to just saying pretty outrageous things that you know, people don't get too upset about. And I guess he felt like somehow he had license to use the N-word in a joke. And Drexel, since you're sitting here on this panel, I wanted to get your thoughts on, you know, especially because this is Bill Maher, who is someone who I assume you watch his show.
I do. Yeah. I have not watched Bill Maher in a long time. However.
But someone that you appreciate his presence and his commentary.
I appreciate the panel and the panel commentary and stuff like that. Bill Maher, even though people think he's a liberal, he's actually a libertarian.
He's
a libertarian.
He's a libertarian, for sure. Yeah.
And I think that we talked about this on the last show, which was where's the line of where do political comedians, where's their line? And I think that Bill Maher obviously crossed that line. I don't think he was thinking. And whatever consequences, like you can say whatever you want to.
Yeah.
I am fine with you saying with whatever you want to. But, you know, in the case of.
But you really.
If you're asking me
specifically
if you're asking me
about
personally,
the N-word,
if you're asking me personally, obviously I thought it was. pretty disgusting and in poor taste. And I actually haven't watched the episode yet. I've only seen little clips of it.
But it was with your friend, Ben Sass. Or
Ben Sass, my 27 to 16.
And again, we only have about a minute. So the point being, though, that I think that, you know, even white comedians backstage at a comedy club might Bill have Maher said got, that Bill in that Maher context. Got
too
said it on air.
Bill Maher got too comfortable. Yeah. I mean, he's had people, he's at Cornel West, he's friends with Cornel West, he's friends with Nina Turner, he's friends with Van Jones, he's friends with all these black people, and he was sitting across from Ben's, a white Republican senator,
yeah.
And he thought to himself, self, I think this is a great idea for me to say right now, and just got way too comfortable in his skin and whatever, and this just goes for anybody, whether you're a liberal, whether you're a conservative, whether anybody, at the end of the day, your words have consequences, and whatever happens, you just have to take that in stride.
Yeah, and I think that he has taken the consequences, and HBO hasn't overreacted, and they, you know, it seems like he's going to be back on the air, and I think owning up to making a stupid comment, I think, was really the key to this. And just oddly, and we'll wrap up after this, earlier that day, I was doing a show, and I wanted to use that term that meant that. I didn't even come close to saying it. And I was just like, well, you know, like Sam Jackson and Django Unchained, that guy, you know, right. And I think that, you know, there's a way to say that without a white guy using the N-word.
You use a visual that people can quite understand. Some people just don't get it.
Yeah. And look, I understand why people on the right are upset, because they're like, hey, he got away with it because he's a liberal.
But that's the crazy thing, because we talked about, again, the swiftness with which liberals and conservatives came out against Kathy Griffin, with which they came out against Bill Maher, was swift.
Yes.
When a liberal screws up, liberals come out against them. I mean, Anderson Cooper was like right there, you know, and Anderson Cooper is Kathy's like right-hand man. But, you know, conservatives just don't do that.
Well, on that note, we will wrap up. Special thanks to our friend Drexel Hurd. You're always welcome here, except for the times that we have like eight people. So you're always welcome when there's space.
I'll just come next door.
Yeah, exactly. So at Drexel Hurd, at Chelsea Galicia, I'm at Christian DMZ. Don't forget the show. By the way, at Christian DMZ. I said my own Twitter wrong. Don't forget the show is at Trump Report ABTV. We'll be back next Tuesday. Same Trump time, same Trump channel. 7 Pacific on Tuesday. We'll see you all then. Thanks, everyone.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.